The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Past 12, Thursday lunchtime. A Manx Radio Today. Man in Line with Nick the Pharmacist. Nick Kay is here. If you want to get in touch, remember that we're giving no personal clinical diagnoses or anything like that. But if you want to ask some broad brush questions, then by all means do get in touch. Call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166177 or email studio@manxradio.com. Mr. Mike, good afternoon, Nick.
Good afternoon, Andy. Thanks for having me back on.
No, good to see you again. I want to dive into travel stuff because there was that problem. It was in Cape Verde, wasn't it? Cape Verde in North Africa, when all sorts of people were getting all sorts of problems. So I think it's worth looking at what to do when you are going abroad.
Yes.
And obviously everybody looks on the bright side and thinks they won't get the old Vindaloo two-step or what have you when they're... But I mean, people can die with some of this.
Yeah, no, absolutely right, Andy. I mean, I think that whole thing when you're travelling is actually really important, and actually to be well prepared and have some good advice and maybe some medicine supply with you. I mean, I think for those types of things you're talking about, you know, severe dehydration is a real problem. You know, our advice would always be, you know, check with a healthcare professional where you're going. You know, you may need certain vaccinations. There may be anti-malarial tablets that are needed. Pharmacies are a great place for advice with that. I know that we do travel vaccines and all that kind of stuff, which is really important because you want to keep yourself safe while you're there. And then again, if you get into that situation, just think about, you know, if diarrhea and things abroad, you know, keep yourself well hydrated, bottled water, you know, out of cans, less of the tap water. But actually having a chat to one of your pharmacists or one of the pharmacy teams about things to take with you. You know, when I travel, I tend to take, you know, some basic painkillers, things for antidiarrheals, some antihistamines. Always worthwhile having a bit of kit with you because, you know, supply in different places is challenging, right?
And so vaccines have to be taken. You can't take them the day before, can you?
No, you can't. And actually vaccines, you know, is really important actually in this space. You know, there are some standard vaccines that we would recommend. But again, you know, things normally take between, you know, well, some things you can take a couple of days before, but, you know, some things take up to a month to kind of right. work. So always worthwhile checking, but not checking too far in advance because things can change. So a couple of months out is always worthwhile.
Okay, so obviously most countries that they're outside Europe, the Far East or Africa or what have you.
Yeah.
Malaria, yellow fever, is that right? And dengue fever, is that still around?
Yeah. No, all of that type of stuff is there, and we get updates on Zika virus and all sorts of different things that come through. So community pharmacies that offer this advice and other healthcare professionals, we use a system called NAFTAC, which links into the Department of the Foreign Office in the UK. There's alerts and warnings that are given, World Health Organization updates. So that's why I say these things can change. They can be fluid, you know, and actually checking a couple of months out before is probably about right. And that getting that sense check of what you might need is really important. You know, we have had people that have decided to change their travel plans because of outbreaks. So, right. You know, it is important to be really well informed, Andy.
So is it the old standby? Don't eat the salad. Don't have ice cubes in your drink. That sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it very much depends on where you're going. You know, in our business, we see people that are sort of, you know, travelling on cruise ships and going to certain places. The risk is obviously much less. You know, where you stay, type of accommodation is obviously affects the sort of advice you would give. But like you would say, you know, things that are bottled water, canned drinks, those sorts of things are really important as you go through, because a lot of these things are waterborne viruses or bacteria, and that's where lots of the problems can come from. But having the vaccinations in place will obviously protect you, but that good and general health is really important. And also going somewhere hot, hydration, being careful with alcohol intake, all that kind of stuff's really important.
And talking about going somewhere that's hot, of course, we live in the Northern Hemisphere.
We do.
So we're desperate for some sunshine.
We are.
And lots of it. We've all seen them. We've all seen the Brits who look like a boiled lobster.
Yeah.
That can be dangerous, can't it? Too much sun can be bad for you.
Yeah, completely. Absolutely. And actually, this is another thing that we're finding, you know, the risk of prolonged sun exposure and the risk of sort of cancer. You know, again, we've got on site a system now which scans moles. So, you know, we can scan a mole on site. We can send that to a consultant dermatologist. And you get a report within a couple of hours. And in fact, one of our team members said, I've had this mole for ages, you know, can you take a quick look at it for us? We did the stuff, and then 5 days later, it was cut out because it was precancerous. So, you know, we all are busy. All these things are there. But like you say, Andy, that being aware of that sun, putting on the sunscreen, being mindful of the UVA, UVB is really important, as well as hydrating.
Okay. Emerging diseases and monitored diseases, because certain diseases are monitored.
Yeah.
But I mean, have there been emerged recently?
Yeah, so again, this is where some of the stuff in sort of Brazil, Zika virus, that type of stuff is things that are monitored. And also, really importantly, when you're in the travel, some things will be, you'll need a certificate to enter a country. So for example, yellow fever is something whereby you have to be, if the country that you're going into, although there aren't that many, may actually require you to have a certificate to prove that you've had the yellow fever vaccine. Or if you've been transiting through a country which has yellow fever in it, then again, you might be asked to have a yellow fever vaccine. The thing about yellow fever vaccines is that they're not available sort of everywhere, and they do have some other risks. So you have to go to a yellow vaccine center for that. But it is one of the things that, yeah, you're right, you get emerging and then certificated things to prove you've had the vaccines before you can actually enter the country.
Okay, so bluntly then, you've got, you can only see your GP or a travel clinic, but pharmacies can do this sort of thing.
Yeah, completely. So yeah, I mean, lots of pharmacies on the island do it, but you know, the service that we offer, you come in, we give you an assessment, we go through that latest advice, we make sure the vaccines are up to date. We ask people to bring their, you know, their vaccine history with them. We don't want them to have vaccines and things that they don't need. And then if appropriate, we'll administer the vaccines on site. So, you know, all of that stuff is really important.
Okay, let's get to the lines. And yep. Howard's first with us now on Manila. Howard, hi, you're live with Nick the pharmacist.
Hi, Andy. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Howard.
Just something that's happening more and more seemingly on the island. Pharmacies. When Lloyd's disappeared, there was a lot of empty shops for a while. Then Clear Pharmacy came in and filled quite a lot of the void. But even now, in this last week or so, they've said, and it's public knowledge, that they were shutting the pharmacy up at the old shop, right, up in Victoria Road, Tesco, and cutting the hours on the other ones. Now, I know you have a good eye on the ball, but how's this going to affect the distribution of drugs through pharmacies, plus, as you've just been talking about now, the checks and tests and whatnot for various diseases, because it's becoming increasingly more that you can't get an appointment with a GP face to face.
Yeah, so Howard, I think your question's really important, actually, because as you say, community pharmacies are now becoming much more than just medicine supply. You know, we're offering that clinical advice, which I think is really, really important. I think what we're seeing on the Isle of Man with, you know, the announcement of the pharmacy closing, you know, I would say, you know, still sitting as the immediate past chair of the National Pharmacy Association and still on the board of directors of the NPA, I'm fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to see what community pharmacy contracts look across all four nations. It's absolutely right to say that the Isle of Man funding situation and the deal that we get from Manx Care is certainly more supportive than you would certainly see in England. You know, in England, you know, I've also worked in Cornwall. You know, when I started giving some advice there was 110 pharmacies. There's now 91. And that knock-on effect of lack of funding and that consolidation is really problematic. I think, you know, being realistic, you know, with some of the ones in Tesco's, the old shop, right, you know, that would be a decision that Clear would probably have made with a heavy heart. But, you know, if we can't make the things stack up, then we have to be really, really mindful of that. I do think, though, looking forward, I think looking at some of the Manx Care mandate and some of the other things that they're talking about, having care closer to home, I'm really hopeful and I strongly believe that there will be further investment in community pharmacy to be that supportive part of primary care to help you get not only your medicines supply, Howard, but also that advice. But, you know, we have to be realistic and say we're working within a financial envelope, even on the Isle of Man, which is challenging. Not as challenging, I would say, as England. Not as good, maybe, as Wales or Scotland, but we are sitting in that place. But I do think moving forward, there's a team in Manx Care that sort of want to hopefully invest in community pharmacy and what it can deliver.
Howard, it's a clear pharmacy at Anika, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
And they're not cutting their hours, are they?
I don't think so, no. But they're right down below Dr. Surgery.
Right.
The surgery, the Snaefell surgery, is in the same building virtually. I don't know who runs the one that's just opened up by Palatine up at the Braddon Hub. There's a pharmacy just opened up there. Right. I'm not sure whether. But they're places where a lot of people just cannot get to. The hub and place like that might be all right for the immediate district. But quite a lot of people are like myself and, you know, elderly. I'm lucky I can still drive, but a lot of people can't. And the pharmacies were a vital part of the community and the people in that community, you know, because you can get advice and get all sorts. So as a lot of a number of the pharmacies are closing, what are the facilities for introducing and training new pharmacy staff, you know, pharmacists on the island?
Yeah, so pharmacist qualification is really quite a lot, actually. So, you know, we have to do 5 years at university. I was fortunate enough, I only, you know, had to sneak in with 4 years at university, but I had to do an additional year's training to be a prescriber. So that means I can write prescriptions as well as dispense them, and lots of pharmacists on the Isle of Man can. I think as well, what I really am trying to do in some of the other roles that I have is actually showcase what the Isle of Man is and the practice that we have here, you know. And I think actually over the next year, couple of years, I think that the Isle of Man should and will become a place where people actually want to be community pharmacists, not only for the great people and the great environment, but actually for the clinical things that it offers. And I think, Howard, it's all of our jobs that are here to actually promote the Isle of Man as a great place to be. But, you know, a community pharmacist or pharmacist is 5 years of training. You know, a pharmacy technician is 2 to 3 years of training, and every member of the team actually has to go through medicines counter training and those types of things. So, you know, your entire team, we absolutely do say a community pharmacy, the clue's in the title, and you've mentioned it as well, Howard, you know, it's the heart of its community, and everybody in there plays a vital role in making it run and making it run smoothly.
Okay.
We have an excellent pharmacist. I can give you his name, is Edwin Conrad.
Yeah,
and
fantastic.
It's a family-run business.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel like you're going into a family when you go in there, because, well, I used to get the Mickey taken out of me because of my name. But, you know, you felt like you were going somewhere and you felt comfortable, which in some of the pharmacies where you went into, there were large conglomerates. Mm. You were basically just somebody walked in, asked for something and walked back out.
Mm. Okay. All right. Howard, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us today.
Take care. Bye now.
Cheers now. Well, I'm going to say this. Cornwall might have been the same as well, because Cornwall's a collection of lots of villages, isn't it?
Yeah.
People know people there.
Completely.
So the fact is that fewer community pharmacies in a place like Cornwall can be a big issue.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, and actually, you know, we've ended up in places sort of towards the far southwest, you know, the Penzance, the St Ives, where actually we're looking at pharmacies that there is real problems in provision. You know, there was an article done in one of the national newspapers actually about pharmacy deserts, you know, places where community pharmacies didn't exist for quite some time, and Cornwall was definitely part of that.
Well, the story is, and it's public knowledge, that Clear Pharmacy are closing their facility within the Victoria wrote Tesco, closes on the 2nd of April, but also their branches at St Paul's Square, Ramsey and Church Row, Port Erin, won't be doing any Saturday trading from the 14th of March. Both branches continue Monday to Friday, which brings me on, Nick Kay, to, and you know, as you're representing the trade body, I read something recently, the fact that 6 out of 10 pharmacies in the UK, now not here, but 6 out, don't trade at a profit.
Yeah. I mean, and it's shocking, actually, when you think about that. If you look at the situation specifically as well within England, you know, since 2015, there'd been no uplift in funding until last year, apart from a service called Pharmacy First, which was new funding. You know, as the chair of the National Pharmacy Association last year, we sort of led and helped with a campaign where there was the first uplift in a long time, which was 19%. But the government's own review suggested there was a £2 billion gap in the funding in England compared to what it should be if those things had carried on from 2015. And actually the hardest part of being the chair of the MPA last year was actually, you know, not being told off by senior politicians for making too much noise, not having all of that pressure, but it was actually the human being stories of people ringing and saying, you know, when's it going to get better, Nick? I've remortgaged my house. I haven't told my wife. You know, I've done this, I've done that. I'm now working 90 hours a week. Because quite often those community pharmacists, especially the ones that Howard described, you know, those family run businesses, you know, we are HR, we are the clinical lead, we are all of those things all at once, as all small businesses that run are. And I'm really hopeful that I think where we go in the Isle of Man specifically over the next 12 months, I think we'll look better. We need to do that.
You think Max Care's on the right track with the pharmacists?
Yeah. So do you know what? I've been really heartened, actually. I've been fortunate or unfortunate throughout my sort of 12 years on the National Pharmacy Association board to see really good and really bad leadership. And actually, I would argue that some of the senior leadership within Max Care is actually exceptionally good, exceptionally receptive. And I think it's for us as community pharmacy and some of the other healthcare providers to actually tell the story of what we can do to Manx Care, and then get the permission to get on with it. And I'm hopeful for that over the next 12 months, Andy.
I've got a message in from, this is from Marilyn, who said, my GP and the pharmacy keep telling me there's a shortage of HRT drugs. Is that right?
Yeah. So do you know what? It's again, sounding exciting. I was actually on a World Pharmacy Council meeting, so I get to be a board member on the World Pharmacy Council as well. And actually, medicine shortages are not only a global issue, but actually, specifically, you know, definitely a UK issue. So there is something called the medicine shortage list, which is across the UK. There's actually 250 medicines that are on that shortage list at the minute, including some motors of HRT. Big stuff last week about actually not being able to get aspirin, 75 milligrams.
So aspirin?
Aspirin, 75 milligrams, yeah. The person that took over me as the chair of the MPA, Olivier, was on Radio 4 yesterday or the day before just explaining that the aspirin, 75 milligrams, is a real problem. So, you know, and the reason for that is quite transparent. That the UK basically doesn't pay enough for its medicines. So if you're in a global supply chain and you don't pay enough, you'll sell it somewhere else.
And the Isle of Man is at the end of that UK supply chain.
We are, yeah. So the Isle of Man, we are linked to, so there's something called a drug tariff, which is used across the NHS. So Scotland has its own one, but England, Wales and Northern Ireland are linked into the same drug tariff. And that's the one, quite rightly, that the Isle of Man follows. So yeah, we are linked into that UK-wide supply chain. So shortages on the UK are mimicked on the Isle of Man.
Okay, here's a message in from Peter, who said, regarding travel, you're talking about travel, what about dehydration on long haul flights and obviously the risk of DVT?
Yeah, no, so that is really key. So, you know, I think with the flight socks are really important to make sure that you've got that in. You know, quite often on long haul flights, you'll be told to wiggle your big toe. If you do that now, and everyone hopefully will start doing the wiggling the big toe, you can feel your calf muscle contracting. The reason that, you know, you get a DVT is because the blood doesn't go back up and we're sat for a long period of time.
DVT is
deep vein thrombosis. Yeah, so blood clot within the leg, which causes a swelling. Doesn't actually cause too much problems other than it hurts like billio within the leg. But the problem is that clot can whiz off and then stop things that are important like your brain and your heart. And we don't want that, Andy. So you know, again, within that sort of, you know, the flight socks, the compression hosiery, the, you know, like you say, wiggling the toes, getting up and moving around. Make sure if you are enjoying a G&T on the flight that you also supplement that with a bit of water and keep yourself well hydrated.
Okay. you keep on talking about being well hydrated.
Yeah.
How do you know how well hydrated is well hydrated?
Do you know what? That is a fascinating...
Nobody wants to be nipping to the loo every 20
no,
minutes.
No, no, you're absolutely right. And you know, I'm most of us are guilty of it. Those of us that do, you know, busy jobs and don't take in enough water. So the standard advice is somewhere between 6 and 8 tumblerfuls of clear fluid a day. So, you know, that's actually quite a lot. And I would say probably most of us aren't that well hydrated. Again, tea and coffee is okay, but obviously the caffeine in both of those will cause you to go for a pee, so will in theory dehydrate. So, you know, when we talk about well hydrated, you know, somewhere around the sort of 6 cups of fluid a day.
Okay. And again, another shortage that's been reported, and this is somebody who doesn't want to be identified, okay, but just said ADHD medications, are they in short supply? Because again, that there seems to be a bit of an issue.
Yeah, so ADHD medicine has caused specific challenges as we've gone through. So there's been not only shortages of core medicines, but actually of specific brands. And the thing about ADHD medicines, when they are either controlled release, so release over a period of time, or quick release, the controlled release ones actually release in specific ways compared to the brand. So if you are swapping the brand, you have to make sure that the release profile matches. So it is tricky to keep that the same, and some of the main brands were out of stock for quite some time. Supply's getting a little bit better, but again, it's worthwhile checking with the pharmacy first.
So you said five years to train as a pharmacist,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah. So you do 4 years academic, and then you have what we call a foundation year, which means that you go out and you spend time. So my foundation year, or pre-registration year as it was called then, I did 6 months in a community pharmacy, 6 months at St James's University Hospital in Leeds. So now what I was chairing a meeting yesterday with some students, and they were saying actually their placements now are fascinating. They spend a bit of time in general practice, bit of time in community pharmacy, bit of time in hospital, because, you know, as pharmacists we can work in all of those locations as well as industry. So yeah, it's a long old bit of training,
and they're very, very transferable skills as well.
Yeah, completely. And you know, I used to say when I was in England, I worked in doctor surgeries, I was the second highest non-GP prescriber in England. I used to say look after the repeat prescriptions for 16,000 patients. When I'm in a community pharmacy, I can't write a prescription because there's no contractual way of us yet to do that. I can write private prescriptions, but I can't write a NHS or Manx care prescription yet. You know, I'm the same person with the same skill set. I'm just sat in a different building. And those are some of the barriers I'm hoping over the next 12, 18 months we can unpick and sort out.
I know you talk to other pharmacists on the Isle of Man. What's the mood like?
So the mood at the minute is, I think... is mixed. I think we are ready to embrace a new challenge of delivery of more service. I think people are focused on that. But again, within that, we want to make sure that our core contract, core functions are well supported. And I would say again that definitely Manx Care do that in a much better way than maybe NHS England do. But I think the view is we're up for the challenge, we're up to deliver more, invest in us, and we can help you deliver the goals that you need.
Okay. Yes, actually, Charles dropped a note in to say, yes, it was Inside Health on Radio 4 reported that nationwide shortage of low-dose aspirin, 75 milligrams.
Yeah.
And again, he's just asking, just reiterate, would you, it'll benefit from restating, how has it come about?
Yeah, so...
And is the Isle of Man affected?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the Isle of Man, we're good on the Isle of Man with stock for a lot of the times. We understand that we get things delivered by boat, and that we understand that boats sometimes don't run. So stock holding in pharmacies on the Isle of Man is definitely higher than it would be, say, in England, who much more rely on just-in-case supply chain. So we'll, most people will probably still have some 75 milligram aspirin. But yes, it's, you know, based on the fact that as the UK, we just don't pay enough for our medicines. So, you know, if you're a global manufacturer and you can sell to Germany, France, Italy, who all pay more than us, then why sell to the UK? I mean, when I started in pharmacy, gosh, in 1998, I think we were the third best payer in Europe. I think we're now about the 15th best payer.
Is that politics or the civil service?
So what it is the NHS trying to drive down the way in which pharmacy contracts are done. So the pharmacy contracts, as pharmacists, were allowed to make a little bit of what we call purchase profit. That's within the NHS contract, and the idea behind that is you've got, you know, 10,000 pharmacies in England, 27 pharmacies on the Isle of Man, all trying to buy at the best rate. Ultimately, if we're all trying to buy at the best rate overall, that pushes the price down and pushes the price down. It's worked really well for government, but has now pushed us probably too low. I mean, there's no way that you can buy a pack of tablets, you know, if you see the technology that's in there, and then them be worth about, you know, 25p on the NHS. It doesn't stack up.
Nick Kay is here with us on Man in Line through till one. You want to go out some calls to get to in just a few moments' time, and lots of questions. If you want to get in touch, WhatsApp or message 166177, email studio at maxradio.com, or call 66 1368. We'll get to this in a moment. We've got a message here that said, Nick's used the weight jab. What's happened?
Manx Solar Electrical offer Wise solar and heating solutions for home and business. We're the Isle of Man's trusted experts in solar panels, Tesla battery storage, and energy efficient heat pumps, helping you power your home sustainably and save money. Call 665800 or visit manxsolarelectrical.com. Come to Manx Solar Electrical. Our island's energy reimagined. When you want the
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
Manx Endometriosis Support Group was set up by Karen and Sharon, who both live with endometriosis. We aim to raise awareness and education for patients, families, friends, frontline staff and medical professionals to reduce diagnosis delays and improve treatment pathways, ideally in a dedicated specialist centre. Contact Manx Endometriosis Support Group via our Facebook page for support and information.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
Offering a high-quality education from years 3 to 13, Benbridge Academy provides an alternative choice for students and families. Our online curriculum gives you the opportunity to take control of your child's education with a pathway that meets their individual needs. Small class sizes and excellent pastoral care allow our students the freedom to thrive. For information or to book a free trial, call 873139 or download our prospectus at benbridgeacademy.co.uk. Embrace the future with Benbridge Academy.
Four unbeaten and keen to get more points on the board, FC Isle of Man face their latest challenge in the NWCFL Premier Division back at the Bowl this weekend. The latest to make the trip to Manx Shores to face the Ravens will be Atherton, Laburnum Rovers, a team which is on a flying run of form with 8 consecutive victories. Join me, Rob Pritchard, for FC Isle of Man versus Atherton, Laburnum Rovers, kicking off at 6pm this Saturday. Manx Radio will be bringing you full live match commentary on our DAB and AM 1368 channels.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Nick Kay is here from Kingsley Moody. Just a quick word, a couple of what's on. St John's Farmers Market's on at the Church Hall in St John's till 3 with fresh local produce. And just a quick word about the airport. Gardening and landscape maintenance works are taking place over the next 3 weeks. The main airport car park, long stay car park, primarily within the standard and premium parking zones. Some areas may be temporarily closed while works are carried out. You may be unable to park in your usual space. Contractors will be on site to assist where necessary. A listener has asked, Nick Kay, whether it's illegal to take painkillers or other medications with you when you travel to the Middle East or anywhere else?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And I think highlighting the Middle East is a really good point. So it actually depends on where you're going. So lots of medicines aren't an issue, you know, but those things that are, as you say, painkiller based, things with codeine, cannabis, those types of things, definitely check with where you're going first. There will be restrictions there. Quite often, pharmacists or GPs, we write a letter to say, you know, this is a prescribed medicine, this is a person under my care. But we, within our clinic and other people do as well, we would just check with the Home Office and see what the advice is for that specific country, advise you country by country. But the Middle East can be problematic.
Yeah. Tramadol?
Yeah, Tramadol, is classed as a controlled drug. Aden would probably cause you problems in some Middle East countries. So, yeah, Tramadol, codeine, morphine, oxycodone, buprenorphine, all that kind of stuff.
Talking of shortages, Mary called just to say, will the ongoing conflict in the Gulf lead to shortages of painkillers, do you think?
Yeah, so a lot of our medicine supply chain isn't actually made within the Gulf, so I think we'll be okay with that. Lots of European and slightly further afield medicines, you know, there are medicines that are made now, actually, which is really interesting. If you supply a medicine to the UK, which includes, obviously, you know, within the Isle of Man, those factories have to be now approved to what we call the MRHA, Medicines Health Regulatory Authority standards. So, you know, tablets may be made, say, in India or in Europe, but they have to be assessed by the MRHA to be compliant.
If you're looking on the webcam, you can tell Nick Kay is the shadow of what he used to be. You've been on the weight loss jabs for how long?
Yeah, so I started my weight loss journey in January 25. Yeah.
Okay, and we're all friends here.
Here we are.
What were you when you started?
Yeah, so on New Year's Day 2025, I was 18 stone 7 with a size 46-inch waist.
And now?
So my weigh-in day, I was looked after by my our lovely nurse at Kingsley Mel. On Saturday, I was 13-10 and with a 34-inch waist.
Why did you do it, Nick?
So, do you know what? That's a question that I get asked quite a lot, Andy, actually. And having been a prescriber of this medicine...
Because you liked eating.
Do you know what? I love it. And do you know what? I still like eating, which is really interesting. So, I was prescribing these medicines for over 4 years, and I had to get to the point where I was ready to do it myself. You know, I was 50 in November, and I have 5 children, and my youngest daughter is 4. And actually, you know, being not able to run around the play park, actually without, you know, genuinely getting stuck on the slide, kid slides as you're going down, you know, getting on the EasyJet flight and needing an extender, I thought this is probably my time. I'm always really, really mindful when people come to see us about weight loss that actually it's a really hard thing to come in and actually say, I need some help. And I think it's, you know, the way in which your clinical team help you in that journey is really important. For me personally, I've battled with my weight probably since I was 12, you know, at 15 years old, 15 stone. And then I started mountain biking. Then I got a job and then I started to play water polo, lost some weight. And, you know, I've put weight on as I've gone through. So, it primarily health reasons. And I try and visualize it. I've lost more than a suitcase allowance for EasyJet if you were to travel across. So, you know, you think about that suitcase as you drag it up, you think about the pressure on my knees, my back, my heart, my lungs. Yeah, it's been a fascinating journey, actually, Andy.
Well, we're not recommending it, but the thing is that it is available, and it's something... Of course, the drug's been around for ages.
So, you know, I get a bit geeky about these things. I say to people in the consultations that I have, you know, these medicines were first found in 1976, only the year after I was born, so 50 years this year, looking at things like anglerfish and Komodo dragons and going, how do they not scavenge food and where do they... Why do they not eat? Found out they, you know, these hormones called gittins working on GLP receptors. Doesn't matter what the hormones called, doesn't matter what the receptor's called, worked really well to control type 2 diabetes. And as you say, been around for the treatment of type 2 diabetes for 15, 20 years. So although in the weight loss space, it's probably been 5-6 years now, you know, there's lots of clinical experience. One of the fascinating statistics I learned the other day was that 7% of the UK population have either been on or are on these medicines, whereas only 3% of the UK population is vegan. And you think about the things that has for a knock-on effect within society, you know, eating out, how you're going to prepare food, all that kind of stuff. They're a fascinating group of medicines.
Bryony dropped a note in to say, has this finished off the gastric band industry?
Do you know what? Genuinely, it's finished off quite a few things, actually. So, you know, Weight Watchers has gone in, you know, as a global organisation. I think in America it's closed down. You know, I think, you know, the cosmetic surgery in that place has definitely reduced. Still a place for it. But I think, yeah, lots of things are happening. And again, lots of other knock-on effects. You know, we've had people who have reduced their blood pressure medication, you know, reduced painkiller medication. So, you know, as a pharmacist as well, the knock-on benefit for not taking things as you lose weight is huge.
What have you done with your old clothes?
What have I done with my old clothes? So do you know what? That's a really interesting question, because you get to the point where emotionally you need to let go of them and go, do you know what? I'm not going back to that place. But that has only happened to me in the last month or so, to be honest. So yeah, a load of stuff to the charity shop.
And you had some very trendy stuff.
Oh,
like,
you
well.
Know, I mean, you know, Andy, thank you so much for that. Yeah, absolutely.
How can a pharmacist, what can you ask the pharmacist, Nick, to recommend for build-up of wax in the ears? You must get this quite a bit.
Yeah, no, so wax, again, is really interesting, actually. So there's there is actually stuff that we do now. We do in the pharmacy. There's a couple of pharmacies on the island that do it and other services. So we actually now can look in your ears. We have a camera system that we use, and then we can actually do a hearing test. We can do advanced otoscopy, and if needed, we can actually remove the wax, which is one of my favourite jobs. I love removing the wax. It's great. It's really satisfying, Andy.
Does does wax in the ear lead to anything? Is it just a minor irritation?
So do you know what? It's really interesting, because what the otoscope's doing is also helping with other clinical diagnosis. So the wax in the ear can be, you know, particularly problematic, hearing, that kind of stuff. We can sometimes get people with feeling off balance, a real discomfort within the ear. So it does have some real benefit when it comes out. But actually, the thing about using this sort of advanced camera is it also goes, actually, you haven't got wax. You know, we've got a little bit of this, you know, maybe an infection. You know, I actually... And if we don't know what the answer is, we can actually send that across to an audiologist that that has a look at it. So I had one I wasn't sure of the other day, turned out to be sort of a fungal infection within the ear, which was, you know, really nice to be able to then reassure the person that actually there's no wax, but this is it, this is the treatment, and this is where we go. So yeah, you know, adding in the earwax stuff, the mole screening stuff, you know, community pharmacies really are moving into a really different clinical space.
Cherry said, my daughter has mentioned pharmacy before she's on the way to go into university, not this year, I think, but the next year.
Yeah.
Is it a job for life?
So do you know what?
Is it an industry that's going to get phased out by AI?
Yeah, so I think that's a really fascinating point, isn't it? You know, I think, you know, community pharmacy, you know, AI will have a place in decision making for all sorts of things. But community pharmacy primarily, if we're not talking about medicine supply, you know, is about seeing people, injecting people, you know, giving that advice. For me, it's been an absolute privilege. It's taken me all over the place. You know, and if they want to come down and have a look around the pharmacy, we'd be happy to let them have a look around.
Okay. Why can't type 1 diabetics have weight loss jabs, says 898 texter.
Yeah, so it's really, you have to bear in mind that with your clinical with your clinical team, looking at your whole history, quite often it's around pushing down blood sugars in certain ways. I have seen specialists actually use this type of medicine in type 1 diabetics, but it's really, really well controlled. It's certainly not licensed. So it's due to the fact that actually the messing around with the blood sugars and pushing it down even further. But, you know, not knowing the full clinical picture, chat to the clinical team and go from there.
Okay. I'm waiting for a hip replacement. I'm 6 months waiting to see the consultant. Yeah. And I've been told by the medical secretary it's 4 years.
Wow.
I'm taking 8 paracetamol a day.
Yeah.
So I think it's a race between kidney failure and hip collapse. How many paracetamol can you take a day?
Yeah, no, so paracetamol is safe. You can take it long term, and actually 8 a day is absolutely fine. And I think there was I saw that a study, especially for this type of pain, that actually if you take between 5 and 8 a day, but you take them every day, then actually the pain relief is better than if you take them ad hoc. So if we've got long term chronic pain, actually, oddly with this one, providing it's taken within the right way, no closer than 4 hours, no more than 8 in 24 hours, actually to maintain that dose and avoid things like, you know, ibuprofen, codeine, is probably a much safer option for the long term, but hopefully not 4 years.
Okay. Phyllis said, and my pharmacist told me there's a shortage of codeine as well. Cocodamol,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, completely. Yeah. So cocodamol is now one of the national shortages. So yeah, those things that you would see. So cocodamol 3500. So again, what we're having to do then, and this is where it gets frustrating. So, you know, as a pharmacist prescriber, you know, we have to send that back to GP colleagues or the prescribers within GPs to say, can you change this? And what we're having to do at the minute is split it out and say, well, cocodamol is paracetamol on codeine, so you get one box of paracetamol, one box of codeine. But yeah, cocodamol is on the shortage list.
Okay, lots more. Crikey, the questions are flying in.
Oh, there you go. You'll have to get me back again, Andy.
Back in a moment with Nick, the pharmacist.
For 100 years, Manx Petroleum has been part of island life. From fueling journeys to heating homes and businesses, we've been there, quietly, reliably, locally. A century of keeping the island moving. A century of keeping it warm. A century built on trust. And today, as ever, we're powering everyday life with care, experience, and premium fuels. Manx Petroleum, always here for you.
Get your garden ready for spring with Riley's. Seed potatoes to garden machinery. Get down to Cool Road, Braddon, for everything you need. And all your pet supplies and bird seed, too. Leap into spring with Riley's Garden Centre.
One architectural design company has particular expertise in achieving planning approval for a wide variety of projects, from landmark buildings to spectacular homes. Talk to the experts at Ellis Brown and get your project off the ground. For excellence in design, search Ellis Brown.
The Isle of Man Creamery, famous for the freshest Manx milk, dairy products, Noah Bakehouse treats and more, has now made ordering deliveries even easier. Simply download the Isle of Man Creamery Doorstep Direct app and you're ready to order. Reschedule deliveries, see your order history and request invoices. Treat your taste buds in a few taps. Get info and add to your order now at isleofmancreamery.com/delivery. Or visit your app store to download the app now.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Nick the Criker, Nick the pharmacist, waxing ears things has gone stupid.
Has it?
Can you de-wax ears without the use of water and oil, says Karen?
Yeah, no, so we can. So what we use in our pharmacy and other providers, I think, on the Isle of Man, the same. There are two ways in which you can sort of remove wax using suction. So we use microsuction, which is clinically the best way to do it. The older way to do it was to actually put high-pressure water in the ear and sort of wash it out. That's not normally recommended as much, but because the wax can be quite hard, we would normally recommend using olive oil beforehand, but maybe 4 or 5 days, sometimes a week, because when you actually do them and you actually look at it, you can almost take away the soft layer and then you're left with a harder layer underneath. You don't want to make it uncomfortable, so oil for softening, suction to pull it out, definitely the best way forward.
Okay, 2 years ago, this is Texter 223, I got a skin condition on my head, face and arms. Eventually got an appointment, only to see the nurse, who said I had rosacea, is it called?
Yes, rosacea.
Okay,
yeah.
Which I'm prescribed creams.
Yeah.
After 6 months, no difference. So I asked my doctor to make an appointment with a dermatology. Still waiting for that.
Yeah.
I decided to see a private specialist who straight away diagnosed skin cancer.
Wow.
And started treatment straight away.
Yeah.
And I'm almost clear now. My advice is, don't always take your doctor's word. Seek a private specialist if you are elderly. Well, we're not advocating that.
Yeah.
However, a second opinion is not a bad thing.
Yeah, no. So, and again, this is where some of the things, you know, skin and community pharmacy is something that we always get asked about. You know, it's something easy. What's this? What's this rash? How does this look? You know, that type of stuff. So, again, you know, we certainly do it. And I think there may be other providers on the island. We use this service, which is called Map My Mole, which will go into other sort of skin conditions where you
Map My Mole.
Yeah, Map My Mole. Yeah, it's fascinating. So, it's actually, you come in, you get like an iPhone, and we have you put a camera on it, the mole gets scanned, and we take a picture of it. And that goes to a consultant dermatologist, a team of 12 consultant dermatologists across. You'll get a written report within 24 hours. I did it on me, and they said I had an irritated nevus. I can't believe I was irritating people, Andy. But again, one of our members of the team, their wife actually did a scan, and it was cancer and had to come out, or precancerous and had to come out. So, you know, this is the type of thing where that differential diagnosis is important. It's important to keep GP colleagues aware of what's going on. So reports go to GP colleagues as well. But, you know, given everybody's capacity is really challenging, then it can certainly help. You know, and again, if we look across some of the stuff we're doing in Cornwall now in community pharmacies, we've got 20 of the 80 that can refer people directly into secondary care if they think there's a cancer symptom. So community pharmacies really are stepping into a different sort of place in this field.
Skin cancer, it sounds threatening, it sounds dangerous, and it can be as well, but what's your view of skin care? Is it more prevalent nowadays?
Yeah, so I think there was definitely a thing now, sort of within the sort of last, I would say, 20 years. Some of the questions you were asking me earlier, Andy, about, you know, the lobster body, that kind of stuff, you know, people are more skin aware, they're more aware of having to use sun creams and that kind of stuff. But again, you know, you're right, a malignant melanoma is life-threatening, so, you know, there are specialist services on the island. You know, always check with one of your clinicians if you're in any doubt. You know, don't put it off. I think any clinician would rather go, that's fine, than somebody put something off and it not be the way.
Okay, so with let me see here. Oh, more questions about the weight loss jab. And
yes.
Somebody's saying, my husband is big boned, shall we say.
Yeah, big boned, if I
have. What age can somebody, what's the top age for somebody going on weight loss jabs?
Yeah, so it is really interesting, actually, because as you get a little bit older, there is a thing about not actually losing as much weight. And actually, I know this is sound really bizarre, but actually because bones become more brittle, actually you need a little bit more padding. You know, I think, check with your clinical team. You know, I would say that we have people of fairly senior age that are on our program, but all of those have been assessed individually. You know, different, as with anything, different shapes, different sizes. So have a chat to whoever you think want to provide the service for you. But again, there are different guidelines when you get a little bit older about how much you should lose and why you should lose a little bit less.
Part of this is personal ambition and what you... I mean, just like with eating, you can have eyes bigger than your belly.
Of course.
Can you also have a goal that you're never going to lose a certain amount? If somebody says, I want to lose, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 stones or whatever, and aren't as tall as you, then that may be unreasonable.
It is. And what we always say, and I think, you know, services on the island would say the same, you know, people are like to put, you know, I've been sat in the chair when I've not been the clinician too many times. So when I run my clinic, what I want to do is I want to make sure that the person's in control. You know, we'll absolutely intervene if we think that the weight's going too low. We'll absolutely give them that advice. But I always say to people, you know, don't set yourself too many goals. You know, see how you go as you go forward. See how you feel each month. Let's take it month by month. Again, Andy, if you'd have told me a year ago, I'd have been, you know, nearly 5 stone lighter. I'd have laughed in your face and told you were absolutely crazy. Yeah, completely. Because for me, in my journey, I tried all sorts of things in the past. And, you know, I was just seeing people get these results and I thought, I'm going to try it. And, you know, I'm as surprised as anyone.
Tell me, which diets did you go on?
Atkins? So tried Atkins, calorie counting, you know, increasing, you know, exercise, which is important, you know, as part of it. But, you know, all the calorie kind of restriction. I think there is something that's come into my head where one of the most powerful things I've been told in a consultation is somebody said to me when they're on the weight loss jabs, it's the difference between can't and want. So if you're on a diet, you can't have something. If you're on the weight loss jab, what happens is you have a little bit and then you don't want anymore. And she said, for those of us that have battled with our weight, it's the first thing that I've done. I don't feel like I'm punishing myself. And there's so much contained within that sentence, which changes the dynamic of how you approach the weight loss journey.
Here's a note in from Lewis who said, I'm 48 and I've got gout.
Yeah.
Is gout more prevalent nowadays?
Yeah, no, so gout is really interesting. So gout is basically a buildup of uric acid crystals within the joint, primarily the joint that's within the big toe. Uric acid, as you would understand, is the things that we kind of, it's one normally kicked out through urine and stuff like that, but it's made when you have what we call tyramine-rich food. So it tends to be if you, like me, like a red wine, like a steak, like sort of cheeses, they're tyramine-rich. So again, gout can be really painful. Hydration can sometimes get rid of it, but treatment is appropriate. But like I say, a bit of dietary changes is sometimes helpful.
Do women get gout?
Yeah. So, and I've seen gout in hands, in knuckle joints, in feet. But it can be done in both sexes.
Okay, I think gout looked after under the minor ailment scheme.
Yeah, some of it is. Yeah, so you can actually get a little bit of pain relief. But again, it's part of that type of bigger picture. Why is it causing it? How often are you getting it? There are preventative medicines that you can get on the from general practitioners. But again, acute stuff can be managed.
Okay, because the minor ailment scheme. I mean, that's at all the Isle of Man's community pharmacies, isn't it?
It is. You know, and again, it's something that's local. Commissioned on the Isle of Man, which is really important. And like you say, there's a list, and it's actually more extensive than some of the lists you'll see in other places. So you've got your bacterial conjunctivitis, impetigo, vaginal oral thrush, nappy rash, constipation, as you say, cough, shingles, gout, hay fever, some inflammatory skin disorders, and exercise-related injury.
Nick, you've talked about the range of services that the community pharmacies are offering, and certainly a lot more than they used to offer. How far is it going to go?
So I think that, you know, community pharmacy for years have been an underused asset. You know, I would say that, wouldn't I? But, you know, having both, you know, grandparents, maternal and paternal, father, uncle, brother, and myself all within pharmacy, you know, we see ourselves, as Howard said right at the beginning, as the heart of the community. And I think the ability to be able to release our skill set is really important. If you'd have told me in 1998 that I'd have been injecting people and writing prescriptions for medicine, a little bit like if you'd have told me I'd have lost 5 stone in 13 months, I'd have told you were completely barking. But actually what we find is that people like to get advice from community pharmacy. The adventation of consultation rooms, so places can be private and you can have those consultations. We have to, as pharmacists, invest in the right environment for our business, for people to feel comfortable, but I think then there's interesting places to go. And actually, within our own organisation, we've actually got to the point now where we've been registered as a clinic, because actually people are asking us for more and more complex things. So being able to employ physios, nurses is and consultants is fascinating move, actually.
Sammy talks about ordering medications off the internet. What steps can you take to ensure beyond all questionable doubt that the medicines you get are what they say on the box and not faked? All right, because in an African democratic country in recent years, their government health minister went to say that his sister died because some of the medicines were fraud and fakery, in other words. Buying off the internet, Nick.
Yeah, so it's a real sort of challenging area. So, you know, if anyone's buying off the internet, then do have a look on what I would call the general pharmaceutical list. So all of the pharmacies that are genuine online pharmacies should be registered and registered with the pharmacy regulator, which is the General Pharmaceutical Council. Only 2-3 weeks ago, there was a big thing about fake, actually, weight loss jabs being manufactured in a site, I think, just outside of Birmingham. And the primary route of distribution of that was through online pharmacies. So again, and they were relatively high quality looking fakes. So, you know, buying on the internet will be appropriate for some people. Check on the General Pharmaceutical Society website.
So the General
Pharmaceutical Council.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. So you need
GPHC,
to
yeah.
Because it can often be very tempting at 3 o'clock in the morning if you're buying something. And
yeah.
Something's 50% of the cost.
Yeah, quite often. And I would sort of challenge as well, you know, especially on the Isle of Man, most community pharmacies do offer stuff that's sort of competitive towards those online prices. So if something's 50% off, often it's too good to be true. It is too good to be true, Andy.
Mosquito-borne viruses. And here's a note in from Terry, who just said, what can be done? Is there anything that you can do to stop a mosquito biting you?
Yeah, no. So again, within some of those malaria preventions, because obviously that's the most common thing we think of with mosquito-borne viruses. So, you know, it's dusk and dawn is where the mosquito is most active. So we normally say long sleeve clothes, that type of stuff, nets, that type of thing. And then if you're in an area where those things are particularly prevalent, then the anti-malarial medicines is obviously going to be the way forward. But, you know, there are also sort of repellents, which can be quite helpful. And some of the repellents you have to check to make sure that you can use them. Some of them actually do have insecticide and DEET in them, so they actually kill the mozzie as it gets close to you. So, there are things to do, but quite often it's dusk and dawn and long clothes.
Okay, you're getting this is like a university examination. Can you ask Nick about antibiotics? Because
yep.
I've heard that some viruses are getting resistant.
Yeah, no. So antibiotics used for bacterial infection and not for viruses. There are some antiviral treatments, but that's not antibiotics. And yes, some bugs are getting resistant to antibiotics, which is why it's important to finish the course, make sure you don't take them inappropriately.
Would you have thought that? Would you have thought that they're so-called superbugs, aren't they? That these things seem to have a life of their own, a brain of their own.
Yeah, yeah, no. So MRSA is the one everyone thinks of, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. And, you know, those types of mutations are important. Actually, what's fascinating to link it back to vaccines, actually, is there are things like pneumonia vaccines, RSV vaccines, that actually, if you are taking the vaccine, then you're less likely to get the infection. If you're less likely to get the infection, you're less likely to need the antibiotics, and therefore the overuse of antibiotics reduces and resistance reduces.
We've talked about that in the past, finishing the course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is important to finish the course of the antibiotics. What you don't want is a few bugs left over that suddenly then mutate, become resistant, although you feel better. And then what happens is those resistant bugs grow back and you end up having another 1, 2, 3 courses.
Okay, could you ask Nick, did he have any side effects?
Oh, with the weight loss jab, a little bit of constipation, but I increased my fluid intake, Andy.
And do you lose your taste when you go on the jab, says Karen?
No.
Absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Right, that's it. Got to go, got to get out of here. We've got so many more questions. Nick, will you come back later on in the summer?
I'd love to come back, Andy. Thanks for having me on.
All right, good to talk to you. That's Nick Kay from Kingsley Mooty talking today about, well, everything really, about how to have a career as a pharmacist too. For those flipping jabs. Right, that's it. Got to get out of here. Thanks to Chris on the production today. Man in Line's back tomorrow with an open line. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Thursday.